Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Miraj Muhammad. I'm getting ready to articulate the beginning of my life history. And surely I'm honored to be able to do so. For I believe if I take time out of my busy schedule and come on this vehicle that allowed me to express myself, and I tried to start off as a youngster growing in a neighborhood that had 7 buildings, thousands of families, own baseball field, football field, basketball court, bowling alley, you name it, we had it. But just so happened, I reiterate, it was called the projects. No such thing as home alone. Everybody that was an adult and that community looked out for each other. I was the Boy Scout. I was the paper boy. I did things that a lot of people would not have done, but when I left off, I said my mother was in the courtroom and trying to get my father to pay the bills that he was obligated to do. He didn't have it. So the judge wanted to send him to jail. And I asked my mother to don't send daddy to jail. And she explained to me that who's going to feed us? I said, I will. And that's how I started my entrepreneurship. But I remember distinctly that I enjoyed doing certain things, and there was a gentleman that I referred to as Butch, but his name was Cletus McCray. And me and Cletus looked like twins. And one day we was coming from downtown and we saw this colorful clothing that men and women had on, and it caught our eye. We stopped the bus and got off. When we got off the bus, we ran back to a street called Earl Street. It was only a block away, and we saw them drilling. It was a dry run because they were ready to go and be in a parade. Oh, did that catch our attention? We joined that day. And because I learned the military procedures and we learned how to be a professional driller, it wasn't just a drill team. It was precision drilling. You moved as one command. We had the colonel that would call the commands, and we had the captain that would get out, and in the military they call it monkey drilling. Boy, would we put on some shows. And my mother allowed me to travel across the country because we was good. What made us so well, brothers and sisters, I'm talking like I'm on the radio, what makes us so well, so good in what we do, is that when you saw us, there was 4 men up front. Actually, it was 8 in the back. It was tall. But when we came across that road called the grandstand, they found out there was the women's in between. It was more women than men. And we wore on the Three Musketeers hat, and our color was black and orange. Orange straight down in our black combat boots, and the women had on all white, colorful little dresses like cheerleaders and white boots. And we were so good that the crowd would follow us to the end. But it taught me how to be disciplined. And I have to thank my mother for allowing me to travel like that. I ever kept you out of trouble and allow you to become whatever you would like to become. And I did it all the way up until I was 13 years old. But during that time, getting up early in the morning, my mama putting my clothes on me, and I was on the bunk bed, but I was at the bottom. My oldest brother was up top. And she would put my pants on halfway and my socks and shoes. Then she would lift me up, put my shirt on, and she lift me all the way up so I can buckle my pants. She would buckle it for me and say, okay, go to work. And I would go out and deliver those papers. And I was so good at it that it had eight floors and eight families on each floor. And so half the building got the newspaper. It was easy during the week. The weekends were a little difficult because the paper was very, with ads and what happened over the weekend and so forth and so on. So I couldn't throw them. I had to literally put them in front of the doors because it wouldn't go under. And then you had to come and collect the money. And they would give you tips. So I made $10. Did that every day, 7 days a week. And I used to give all the money to my mother. She would give me 50 cents to get in the skating ring and 50 cents to get skates and 50 cents for candy. I was in 7-Eleven. But when she would go to school or go to work, and she cleaned office on Saturday, I would go with her. I was the type that I was going to be anywhere my mother goes. She get dressed, I get dressed. Where you going, boy? Going with you, mama. You can't go with me. I got to go to school. I'll wait for you when you get out. And she would chase me back in the house. All she had to do was just look at me. You knew you better go running. But I had to do other things because I gave my mother all the money. So I used to take my oldest brother's red truck, and I would take bottles. That was a way of making money. I would paint apartments and rooms, the bedrooms. And $10 a room was good money back then. And I'd throw up bring home to my mama, but I had a little money in my own pocket. So I learned how to do it for yourself at a young age, but then I heard the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad through my brother, Musa. That was his name, Musa. And Musa brought me into the religion, and I used to wear his clothes at school. I was only in the sixth grade, but I used to wear bow ties, and shirts, and suits, and affairs. And I called myself Rashid Shabazz, but I wouldn't let the teachers teach me. And I gave them hell because I would rebel, and they would give me F's, and my mother would be upset because I just didn't. I felt I was above that. How could you be above education? I guess it was the people who was teaching it to me because I was learning the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's ways until I got to the eighth grade. When I got to the eighth grade, I found a second mama, Mrs. Johnson, and that's how I learned. That's what got me involved in education. And then I had to get my form and fill it out. You had to be as close as you can with the writer that wrote longhand. In order for you to be accepted as a Muslim in the Nation of Islam. So I traced it. I passed at a young age, 14 years old. Then I started going to the temple and listening to the brothers and all they wanted out of life. And I used to be with brothers that had 9 children. Some had a little more, some had less, but they had children. I didn't have any. But the Honorable Muhammad said, get married. And that was the beginning of my success. I looked for a wife, and I found her. She was a school teacher. She didn't know how old I was, but I was successful at my own restaurant at a young age, Feast from the East. Then I had 2 other restaurants, Steak and Tape. And I was doing very well. So a lot of the females thought I was older than what I was. And I drove the finest automobiles. I was an entrepreneur. I was on my way. And so I have to honestly say my wife was a great asset to me because she taught me the things I did not know. I always say my mother taught me how to respect them. My wife taught me how to love her. That was amazing. So I was being taught by a female that thought that I was as old as she thought I was. She thought I was 25. I was only 16 years old. It really blew her mind because she said, I'm in love with a baby. But I wasn't no baby. I was raised by men much older than me. My uncle taught me a great deal, Uncle Johnny. I was hearing Islam at the age of 10. They call it Mohammedism and the Crusader War and all those things. Johnny was a good reader. He was an engineer. He came from the Navy. And he would sit there at his table and drill me and drill me and drill me and drill me. I learned a lot from my uncle. And so here come the crack drill team of Temple Number 25. And I was in the audience for the first time watching people drill. And the sisters, boy, could they drill. They beat the brothers. They literally beat the brothers. That bothered me. So I joined the drill team for the next year. I kept telling the drill instructor, I said, look, tell them to do this. I'll get back in line. Look, tell them to do that. I'll get back in line. His name was Woodrow. Because the way he used to drill, Trent, what? That's how I used to drill. I said, man, you're not going to get anybody's attention with that. So he said, you do it. Oh, what did he say that for? Boy, I had the one that cracked his drill teams on the East Coast. Because why? I did that for a long time. And the reason them brothers couldn't beat those sisters because our team, when I was young, was called the Cannoliers. And because it was the Cannoliers outstanding, those women that was in the temple came from that era. That's why they could drill so well. But I got them that year. And I won. I always like to be outstanding in anything that can help. When it came to charity, I used to give all my money, $3,000-$4,000. My wife used to say, well, why you bid like that? I said, don't worry, Allah will give it back to us. That's who I was. That's what I do. Anything I put my mind to, I'm going to do it. And so I became the drill instructor, and all the brothers loved it. Because I used to dress them in red gloves and black suits. And I dressed in white suit and red gloves. Well, we used to have that. I thought I was in the parade the way those brothers was drilling. And I was the lost and found man. I said, Brother Yusuf, you went to see the Ahmadiyya Muhammad? He said, yes. That's how you get there. He said, I brought in 350 people. How long did it take you? 90 days. I said, okay, I'm going against you. I'm going to beat you next year. He said, yeah, right. I brought in 350 in one day. I'm doing the impossible. Yes, I went to see the Ahmadiyya Muhammad. They paid for it. I upgraded myself to the suite. Never got a chance to see the Ahmadiyya Muhammad because the captain said, you sent this one out, the Ahmadiyya Muhammad don't feel too well. Now, whether it was right or whether it was wrong, he's the captain. Yes, sir. I walk my post in a perfect manner, keeping always on alert. Suit officers were standing in that case. Yes, and only quit your post when you're properly released. So I went through those in hardest. When I was a little kid, so I knew how to do it. I was a man. And so these restaurants became successful because it was like a satellite for the temple. Because my restaurant, you're going to hear a song, and you're going to have certain things. And the reason I used to bring so many people, I used to give them a steak sandwich called steak and tape, bean pie, and newspaper. And I used to put them on the little children bus, that yellow bus, bring them in. That's what I did. So I was outstanding when it came to that. And then they used to move me around because they needed someone to help B to get to be stable. I went out fishing and bringing in a lot of people. They sent me to Patterson in order for them to get their number. I had to go out and knock doors and show the brothers how to go and get the lost and found. Then they brought me in Elizabeth, so Elizabeth couldn't get their name. I went there and back to the house, and they got their name. So I did a lot of this as a youngster. But it motivated me and gave me the determination of things I want out of life. So as a young man, I was a good martial artist. And I used to fight larger men. And I did well with all of them. And I went on to become a green belt, a brown belt. And I got my black belt by beating three senseis. I take credit for that because that's when Muhammad Ali picked me up. So who was this little man beating up big guys and black belts? And so I was given the opportunity to be with Muhammad. And I used to be around his camp, and I'm there to protect his life. But my first fight was when he finally decided to fight a heavyweight that had nine children, Zorro Foley. And that was at Madison Square Garden. And I'll never forget when I tried to get in with the crew, they stopped me and said, there's no more complimentary tickets. I said, oh, I lost this one. One day, Youngblood, none of them came back for me, but one did. That was Muhammad Ali. He said, he's with me. He said, no, you got all your complimentary tickets. He said, you say you can't get in? Okay, there'll be no fight, but I'm not fighting. It's okay, okay. And that got me. That got me. That made me understand you have to know who's around you, and you love everybody that's around you. And Muhammad Ali did that for 12 years with me. And so I was able to travel with him and see the world and obtain the world. And I said, Herbert Muhammad, Jabba Muhammad, the son of the Alamalaj Muhammad, the brother of Imam Willis D. Muhammad. He said, Rod, you can work these two hands and you'll do okay, but get a whole lot of hands to work for you and get rich overnight. There it is. I was working my hands day and night, cutting up this, cutting up that, make sure everything was clean, make sure my Rest your eyes so clean before I close up. Don't get home till 1 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes 2. So I knew that was hard work. But there was people around me who didn't have money. So I wanted to give them an opportunity to be able to make their own money. Yes, I gave them jobs. My brother used to run my restaurant, and he was just a freshman in high school. They used to lock him up because they thought he was a pimp or stealing cars because all my cars were new. And he can drive anyone he wants as long as you bring it back clean. You know, I had to put gas in it, but you had to bring it back clean. So he had the keys on my automobiles. And then we had to show them that he's a manager of my hotel there on Chancellor Avenue. And that was the beginning of me stepping forward. So we created a corporation called Cornerstone. It was 5 of us. Akbar Muhammad, Bilal Muhammad, Abdullah Muhammad, Baha Muhammad, and Murad Muhammad. They call us the 5 brothers. Here they come. We all came together. And I remember distinctly downtown, we didn't have an office. It was 2 phone booths. So my sister that I grew up with, Fitcher, her name is Fitcher Muhammad. And she was my first assistant. Her job was to answer those 2 phone booths. And she'd put her hand on it and say, I'll put your tone on. She'll call you by name. That's how we started until we got our own office. And we sit in the office in the conference room and Muhammad Ali was training in Arizona. So Baha and Akmal went to see Muhammad Ali. Abdullah and Bilal went outside the country. So they left me by myself and I never, ever sit around and wait for nobody. So I asked the assistant secretary, and I said, would you be so kind to get the boxing commissioner on the phone? He said, yeah, his name is Bob Lee. I said, oh, Asian, huh? You couldn't tell whether he's Asian or was he African-American. He speak very distinctly. And he said, young man, if you listen to me, I'll get you in. Everybody that came here failed because they didn't listen. And he said, go down and see my assistant, Marion Wilkinson. She was over the top of the Consumer Affairs. I went down and met her. When I met her, something about her I liked. I mean, long story short, I said, young lady, you know, I can make you my wife. She said, young man, you don't know what you're getting into. I got 6 babies. I said, what did that mean? She said, you don't care? I said, I love children, which I have. I love children. So she decided to help me get my license. The great tennis player, Althea Gibson, was the commissioner. And she gave me my license. And we put on a fight and outside, you know, because I come from the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. So I wanted to put on a fantastic fight. So I went in the Italian neighborhood and took their field called Barringer. And I'm doing my fight outside. And the commissioner said, I don't think you're going to be able to get this one done. I said, why? She said, hurricane is coming. I said, we're going to still go on. Boy, it got dark. Here comes that hurricane. So the next day, Tony Marenghi, the columnist for the Star Ledger, wrote that Murad Muhammad was not saved by the bell. What he meant by that, I had a cancellation. And Hurricane Bell, bing, fight is over. So he said, I wasn't saved by the bell. But knowing me, I bounced back the following week. And over 6,000 people showed up. It was a success. Great fights. All fights that you love sitting and watch. Pedro Augusto and Ernie Langwood. Ernie Lassner. That was a war. Then the silver medal when Jerry, his name was Jones. And Jones was, he fought a guy named Asafari. I don't know where he got his name, but he ended up being Mustafa Hamsha. So it was some great fights. I got great recognition for it. And that was my beginning. The youngest promoter in the whole country, more or less the world. Just a young guy with an idea. And the only reason why I had to leave my company, because my company started wanting why I'm spending so much stationery. I gave my cards away, I'm promoting, I'm in the papers all the time. And they wanted to stop me. They wanted to stop me from doing what I want to do. You can't put no chains on me. I'm a free man. And so I gathered together with one of the most powerful attorneys, Norman Fishbein, that we all love. I asked him to sit in. And Norman said, "What do you want?" I said, "I want freedom. I want my piece of paper up there that says, Boxing Promoter Mirage 100. So the four men said, "No, we're not giving that to you." So the lawyer had to say, "That's not a corporation. That's an individual. That's his license. So what do you want from the deals that's pending, the deals we have?" I said, "Y'all can keep it. You can keep everything we talked about, everything. I hope it all comes to fruition, but I just want that piece of paper and I'm free." They signed off. Now, when I walked out of the office, I had nothing in my pocket. But here come Baja. I said, "Where you going?" "I'm going with you. I'm your matchmaker." He liked being a matchmaker. So I said, "Okay, you're a biological brother." So we went down. I said, "Hold it. Stay on the elevator." We went back up to a higher floor in my office. Walked in. I want to know who's the boss. And boss saw me, he was very happy because I was doing fights, so he was very happy, very elated that I came. And what did he say? "Rob, what can I do for you?" I said, "You can make an investment. I want to go to Africa." And so far, I saw my guy, he wrote that check. And that was the beginning. That when I went to Africa, I was able to produce over $11 million. So that's when my name became large. Jerry Eisenberg wrote, while Don King couldn't get the green light, didn't produce the green money, while Bob Arum tried to get the Arabs off their all but couldn't produce the green money, there's a young man from North New Jersey in Ghana with $14 million for Muhammad Ali versus Kenny Norton, number 3, true story. Can't lie about this, all this is in the papers. I mean, every newspaper throughout this country. So that's what made it. So I'm off. So I felt that I wanted to help my state, because they were tearing up Norway State Prison. But in doing so, I had a brother that went to college there. And I couldn't find him. He was an introvert. He didn't believe for you sending him no care package. He don't want you coming up to the prison at all. He said, "I'll just do my time. You got 25 years. So I said, if I could join the system, I would know where my brother is at, and I would go visit. Well, it worked. I was able to convince Governor Burns to give me exclusivity, which never happened, of all the institutions, and I'm going to take these families off of welfare, pay for their stay, pay for their food, pay their hospital bill, legal bill. I gave it to them. What I'm going to do. Eli was a nut on welfare. So my thing was, would you pay to go to jail? They came from all over the world just to go to jail. You see, boxing behind prison wall never been done in the history of the boxing world. And this is maximum security. So now I'm going to give money to the victims fund, had a victim fund, no money, money to the widows who lost their husbands in the line of duty, money to get the bulletproof vest with Senator Chris Jackman, money for the schools, money for the institutions, money for the state. And I was asked with my staff, how am I going to do it? I said, I don't know, but God is great. I didn't do it for money. I did it to be able to help my brother, Shahid. And so I saw a movie called The Network, because I love movies. Movies, I see more than just the movie. But in listening to the movie, it was a show called The Network. And The Network was portraying Walter Cronkite. And make a long story short, I'm sitting in this movie, watching this movie, and I was fascinated because this man used to tell everybody, stick your head outside the window and say, hell no, we won't take it anymore. And because he was on TV with this, they were doing well. Everybody was watching. And then he decided that he saw Jesus. And Jesus told him he was doing the wrong thing, that he should stop it. So lights, accent, it goes on. He's in his pajamas. He said, brother, sister, don't listen to me. Do not do what I ask you to do. Later on in the picture, there was two Caucasians with suitcases of money. They went downstairs, and it was a Black Panther party. And they paid them cash. Next year, Noah, three men sitting on the front row. Lights, action, curtains go up, and Cronkite and saying, don't listen to me. What I told you is not true. And they stood up and shot him down. I mean, they shot him down. I said, whoa, a Black man shooting down a white man on national TV. But then they went to the back, and the white boys were jumping up and down. And they hollered, the ratings just went up. I said, oh, my God. The networks are in the rating business. And so I said, I'm going to the network. Well, I knew, being an African-American, with the name Muhammad, there's no degrees behind my name. How in the hell am I getting to the network? So I found a company called Big Fights Incorporated. They had a suite there off of 46th Street. And I went to that suite, went upstairs, and they sit there, what can we do for you, Mr. Muhammad? I said, I need a consultant. So consultant, you're a boxing promoter. We don't consult promoters. I said, no, you can make a lot of money with me. Well, how can we do that? I said, I need to get into the networks. Yes, but we don't sell boxing. I said, it's not selling boxing. I said, get me into the network, and I'm going to be like James Brown. Open the door, and I get it myself. They laugh, and I'll give you a percentage off the top. I know that got their attention. So I signed the agreement, and 3 days later, they said, meet me at Time Warner's. I didn't even know where Time Warner's is at. I met them there. We went up and saw the president, Seth Abraham. He said, what can I do for you, Mr. Muhammad, because we don't do live boxing. I said, live boxing? If I was selling you live boxing, I need to get up and walk out. I'm sure selling you ratings. What do you mean? I can put you behind maximum security prison walls where they're burning the prison down. Rahway State Prison? I said, yes. You can get our cameras around Rahway State Prison? I said, yes. Deal. Now I had to take a man that's in jail for double murder. But the reason they put him in jail for a violation of his probation. But they had a hung jury with double murder. Nevertheless, he's in prison. But when I was putting on the fights, I was losing so much money. Yes, people was paying, but they only have 500 people. So I can't make no money like this. I had to come up with an idea. And so when I went into HBO, they decided to bring those cameras behind the wall. And now we're behind the wall. I got to make this big because we're on TV. We're on HBO. So I brought in James Brown and sing the national anthem. That's a kicker. I had the rain built right there in the prison, so we didn't have to take it out and bring it in. And all those athletes were training hard. This is big stuff right there. And you got 1,000 people, but only over 500. There's 500 inmates that can't get down there, but we had to put it on closed circuit so everybody would be happy. And I had to go get someone that would bring the recognition, and he was the number one contender for the light heavyweight championship. His name was Gregory the Flame, Eddie Gregory the Flame. And Eddie was getting ready to fight for the world title within 120 days. I said, good. I'm going to put you behind a kid that hasn't fought in 3 or 4 years. So the manager said, well, why would we want to do that? He said, we're getting ready to fight for the title. So what are you getting for the title? When he told me, I'd give you the same thing. You fight here, add it up. You got $100,000. He said, when do you want this fight? I said, I want this fight in 30 days. And you want us to fight James Scott? Yes. And you're going to pay us what we get when we go fight for the title. Yeah, so now you got two fights. If the guy ain't fought in years, you should be able to beat him. They took the fight. Fight is on. And my God, it was a great fight. A great, tremendous fight. HBO won Program of the Year. Now, I was with them for 27 years, long story. We'll come back to that. But I shocked the whole state. Everything I said I was going to do, I was able to produce it because here comes CBS, here comes NBC, and I got HBO. But the problem with all that, and I have a lot of things to talk about, it was difficult getting men into that prison to fight. I went to New Orleans and found the guy referred to as Hoss. He was in charge of the prison in New Orleans. So I then bring his fighters that was in jail to our jail. It worked. It kept me going. until I would start getting fighters from all over the world and bringing them in. We became a phenomenon. And I remember when Don King tried to come into New Jersey, and when he tried to come into New Jersey, he gave $1 million, believe me. Now, Scott was doing well, but he can't make $1 million in one fight, so therefore he's going to leave. But I checkmate him. I checkmate all of them, including King. I had exclusivity with Governor Burns, the Attorney General, and Favre over top of all the institutions. So he told Don King, said, you can't interfere. He has exclusivity. When it runs out, maybe you can come. Okay. That's what put him in the position when he tried to come and snatch what I had. I protected myself. So then they start calling me the promoter, the prison promoter. I didn't like that, but I am in the prison. So I said, all right, Scott, we got to fight, Sam. He said, man, I'm not fighting. So he said, maybe you're not fighting. I'm not fighting. I don't understand. He said, first of all, Don King gave me $1 million. I said, he did, yes. So the warden had to tell him, not in a nice way, in a very ugly way, that you're not your own man, one. And two, you cannot say what you're not going to do and then take the money. So you're going to hook and crook and beat this man out of his money. It's not happening. So fight back off. That's what I do. Scott told me he wasn't going in the ring, because his hand, these ain't the right gloves. I said, it's the gloves you've been using. He said, they are not. They hurt my hands. You got to go to Everlast and get some new gloves. I said, you know how far Everlast is, champ? He said, well, I'm not fighting with the gloves. We got almost 35, 40 minutes for a showtime. So I said, okay, you wait right here. It takes you about 10 minutes to get out of that prison. And they let me out. I went to my car and came back with a box. And I put it on the table. And he said, what's that? I said, your new pair of gloves. This is Muhammad Ali's glove. And it had on there, Muhammad Ali. I said, if you tell Ali, man, I probably could never be with him again. So he put the gloves on. And he said, that's what I'm talking about. I said, all right, let's go out to the fight. And so my people ask me, how did you get Muhammad Ali's gloves? They're the same gloves. I just wrote Muhammad Ali on it. And that's what saved that fight. And there's a lot of stories like that. Because I don't believe in postponements or cancellations. That's not in my makeup. So we've done well, very well. And two, I saw a hotel in trouble. They were so troubled over what was going on that they thought it was going to be a cancellation. I'm known for not cancellating anything. But I needed a place because this ain't the prison now. I want to do something outside the prison. So I was watching TV and found out Bally's was involved in organized crime, their president. So they was on hold. But they went and got Weinstein from Las Vegas. He put on all the big fights when I was with Muhammad Ali. Caesar Palace was it. Caesar Palace was so lovely that I used to go in because I was in that hotel. And then call out and let everybody know that I'm at Caesar's Palace. You can't go to Vegas and not be at Caesar's Palace back then. After all the big fights, So I went there and said, Weinstein, hey, man. I said, Woody, Willie, we called Willie Weinstein. I said, Willie, let's do what you was doing in Vegas. He said, no, I'm just a mascot. I said, what is a mascot? He said, I'm just spraying high rollers and I'm clean. He said, but go see Tannenbaum. And I'm going to tell him you said it. So I walked down the hallway and this tall man was back to me. He said, Mr. Muhammad, he didn't turn around. Before he turned around, he said, I hate boxing. What could I do for you? I said, you hate boxing, yes. So I might as well walk out of here, but I'm not here selling boxing. I'm here to sell, to clean up your name. Because on 60 Minutes, they said Valley is part of organized crime. Well, what do you got? I got a world title fight. And I was Saad Muhammad, came into Valley, and I've been with them 27 years. Because I cleaned their name, sent it around the world. Now, these are things, and there's a whole lot of them that I have done. This gives you a touch of some of the things I've done, and sometimes you will hear me go back and forth. It's okay. It's okay that you go back and forth, but I can go back and forth because there's a lot of history. But now I'm the promoter of Atlantic City, the promoter of Rahway State Prison, so I gave up Rahway. I did so much for them brothers, and some came out like Fawzi Muhammad became world champ, but he was in that program. Some came as referees and judges. So it did help the African American because boxing is unique. Boxing is one of a kind. And what makes it different than any other sport, you can't say, hold it. That's not that. You got to put on everything that's original. So I became this famous promoter, and then I started doing things all over the state, Playboy Club and Great Guards, doing fights in the park. People came at night in the park. I brought Muhammad Ali so people wouldn't fight in the park, and they all came and packed my place. And I was doing fights downtown in the hotel. Where I went, I was selling out and making a difference. And I gave a lot of money to North Cripple Hospital. I did so much in the way of Sakat. And that's who I believe that I was created to be. A good name is better than gold, and that's what I wanted, a good name. Sure, some of the people try to destroy it, but they plot and plan, God plans, and that God is the best of plans, so I don't know what that means. I wasn't going to let anything stop me from my success in the world, so I was motivated. But I was being taught by Imam Wolfie Muhammad. I was called to speak. And I was speaking in all these schools, and so they asked me to come and speak. Come to find out, I was number 20. I couldn't believe I was number 20. But it took up so much time, I had to leave, and Yusuf Shaw was sitting on my left, and then Wallace Muhammad was sitting on my right. So I turned to Yusuf and said, tell him, man, I have to go. He said, if you want to go, tell him, but you shouldn't go. How are you going to leave and not let your leader hear you speak? He got a point. So I did. Oh, was I so elated. Yeah, he was really related. So I thought, I'm going to have to explain to all of them what I do and why I do it and how they all will benefit. And so I was able to bring to Atlantic City some of the largest fights you ever wanted to see. And my fight was very successful And that's when I got the name, the Kid Promoter, by a guy that was in boxing, but he and the wrestling organization got together. His name was Willie. Willie Goldstein, I think his name was. And he said, "You remind me of myself, boy." I said, "Did you say Roy?" He said, "I'm going to name you the Kid Promoter." And that's how I got my name, the Kid Promoter. But I did so much for New Jersey. It's unbelievable. And I enjoy doing it because it comes from my heart. But I decided that I'm going to not stay here in New Jersey, that I'm going to New York. And my God, did I do New York. You know, brothers and sisters, once again, I keep saying brothers and sisters, but I have a technical engineer that knows how to take his brothers and sisters out of it. So I'm just speaking my mind. And that's what you do when you're trying to tell your life story. Things just come to you. And it's mind-boggling that I did everything to stay above. And I remember when my lawyer took me to the bank, and I was just a young guy, and I went to the bank, "Oh, I need $5,000. He said, "I'm not going to give it to you unless your lawyer signed." So he did. His corporation signed. I came back after paying the five, "I need 10. And he gave it to me, and my lawyer signed his corporation. When I went to $20,000, the lawyer said, "No problem, I'll sign here." He said, "No, I want you as an individual." So he signed it. He walked out. He said, "He's a bastard." I said, "I like him. I like him. I want to win him over." And brother, sister, he became my banker. I had up to a $1 million line of credit. He was the boss. First National, Joe Papp. That was his name, Joe Papp. Joe Papp used to go to New York, to NBC, CBS, HBO, USA, you name them, and get my money. I never had to go get it, and he would deposit in the bank. And Joe would make sure he fell in love with boxing, rightfully so, because I mean, he's getting a lot of money for his right now. Nobody in the state got money from Joe like I did. But I always produced. And he had enough for it. Then he indicated to me that I should tie up my money. I said, "I can't do that, Joe." He said, "Bob, put $1 million." I said, "Nope." He said, "I said, take 100. So he took 100. And he said, "You'll never see these ratings again." And gave me 16% ratings. He said, "Why don't you lock in for 4 years? I said, "Nope." He said, "You're the fastest drawer in the West." Well, because every time I do a fight, I take my money and give it here, give it there, give it there, so I couldn't tie it up. And he's right. You're lucky you get 2% today. But you don't get that kind of money today because of why? Because they don't trust us. And so, therefore, they're not giving us anything that will help us. But I didn't have that up there. Up there, they were just amazed that I was able to perform and able to make things happen. And you got to understand that I had to do things with ABC, NBC, CBS. I had to be able to negotiate with them and allow them to be able to give me what I deserve to have. But not just me, the boxer. So I was able to go in there and take the CBS and the NBC. And ABC wouldn't come behind the walls because Howard Cosell, who was a friend of Ali and a friend of mine, he said he's not helping no inmates. And he was the only commentator, so he had a right and he had a piece of ABC. So he wasn't bringing his cameras. But we had NBC, CBS, and HBO to come behind the walls. And they did wonderful, great, great ratings. And very rare you can go from one network to another, but I was doing a lot of fights, and you can't just give me 3 dates for the year. Now you give me 12 fights for a year, and you can't give me no 3 fights. So I was able to go to this one, that one, and they allowed me to do so because I produce. But like they all said, well, I just don't sell us a fight. He promotes it. So what they're promoting, by promoting collectively, we gain great ratings. I mean large ratings. But you have to understand that before I reached that height, I was down low on money. And so I had to go to my mother and say, Mama, I made $4,000. My mom used to call me a pimp. How do you know I got $4,000? Mama, I need $5,000. How do you know I got? I had a mother-in-law the same way, but she was a little different. She said, you know the routine. Meet me downtown. So those are the two women that I did so much for. They sure they lived in their own homes. They sure they ate well. My mother-in-law didn't like the door. My mother-in-law sucked. All you gotta do is say, let's go. You go to Russia, she's coming. So I kept my mama on the day because I had a great love for her. We grew up together, even though I had 4 siblings. It was my mama and I. Whatever we did together, we did it. And she, I knew how to put up the Christmas tree. I knew how to lay noyers. I knew how to paint. She taught me all of that. But she did that by herself. I would watch her and try to help her. That was my mama. So I made sure she had all the necessary things that anyone would want. Yeah. I studied Islam with Imam Hussein Muhammad. He used to come and visit me. To the day, send me $1 million. I cannot tell you when he lived. Never went to his home. But he always followed him. And one time he came by himself, and I said, where's the brother's world? He said, there. But he was able to do things that a lot of people probably would not have done. And he came to visit me. He would come to be in the dugout. I remember he was in Casico Fieldhouse. Long story how I got there. But when he came in, I said, Billy, now, you're going in there by yourself. He said, I didn't tell you to send me those fancy cars. My fathers don't drive cars like that. He meant that. You couldn't send him no limousine. You couldn't send him a Bentley or you couldn't send him a Mercedes, but if you sent a Chevy, a Cadillac, he'll accept that. So I said, I learned my lesson, and I won't do that no more. I said, look up there, sold out. He said, yes. I said, do you see us up there, Billy Mann? He said, you cross over. And that's what happens when you go to a manatee. And he taught me that. Leave the community, go to humanity, grow in life, and come back again. Yes. So I had mentors like that. My father, he didn't mentor me, but I had my brother. I always wanted to be like my brother, Musa. Brother Musa, he was tough. Clean everything, he had to be spotless. My God, you clean, you're going to be in the corner with a toothbrush. He made sure everything is clean. That's the way it was. He was so bad, a fanatic in cleaning, that me and my sister used to have to put our coats in the bag and sing like we're going to the incinerator, which is out in the hall. Dipsy-dee-doo-da, dipsy-dee-dee. And he didn't say nothing. When we got outside that door, we grabbed our coats and ran. And we didn't come back till my mama came home. So if you can't beat us with mama. So that's how my brother was so clean. But I wanted to be like him and be as sharp as he was. And all he taught me about was Ramadan. And all those years in the prison system, that dream I had to help my brother, who came up for parole and sent him home, I mean, sent him back to jail. He came up the second time in 6 years, so it's going on 12, and sent him back to jail. On his way out, they asked him, who is my Muhammad to you? Don't tell me about your Muslim brother. He said, that's my biological brother. They said, what? Come here. And he walks over there and he says, you telling me that's your brother? I said, yes, and parole. Everything I prayed to God for, my brother came home. Never caught him doing nothing. It was the first time black men went to jail for conspiracy. And that word conspiracy is very difficult for anyone to get out of it, more or less a black man. That means you won't do that time. Innocent or not innocent. And so he came home, never went back, and he's a reader. He's an introvert, but he's a reader. He reads everything. You lay it down, he's picking it up. He's going to read it. And he enjoyed reading. And I enjoy him, and he enjoys his brother. And he tries to be wherever I'm at, wherever I go, he tries to be right there with me. And he said, I'm in love. You know, I got two brothers, and he is the one, the other one I read. That's my youngest, Samad. And you know, one thing about my mother, I want the records to reflect. My mama was a Christian, and she wanted to go to church. I put her on my shoulder and carry her there, how much I loved her. And one day we were sitting listening to you, man, want to see my aunt. And my mama said, okay, I'm ready. I said, Mama, we can't go anywhere now. Too many people came to see me. She said, no, fool, I'm ready to take Shahada. She was 83 years old. Put it on the back page of the newspaper, the Muslim Journal. Yes. And my mother left here saying, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah. Because my sister and I's arm was making sajda prayer. And we kept hearing the third voice of Allahu Akbar. And we say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And she was doing her prayers in the bed. And that's when she said, yes, I'm still alive. she was praying with us. And then about 3 more days later, she passed away. May Allah be pleased and grant her paradise. Separate her faults from her goodness. But that woman motivated me to be everything that I can be. And that woman stuck with me. And that woman allowed me to travel at a young age. And that woman gave me a beating. You did something wrong, you won't get whooped. You don't wash some dishes, she'll beat you out of your seat. She was strict. She was strict. I loved her. She beat me, I get right back up on her. She beat me, I get right back up on her. She beats me. You couldn't push me away from my mother. And I remember when we went to do the office, he stopped at the store and got some crackers and some peanut butter and jelly and some cheese. And I was only about 9 years old. And I used to go to her in the other room and said, is it time yet, Mama? No, not time yet, sir. Come back. It's time because I wanted lunch, man. I wanted what my mother was, just her and I. No more 5 of us, her and I. So she said, okay. I came to her 3 times. Is it time yet? No. Is it time yet? No. Is it time yet? Okay, come on. and put that tablecloth down, white tablecloth, on the desk, and put them cheese and crackers and jelly and peanut butter. I was in seventh heaven. Greatest thing she could have ever done. And I felt special because it was just her and I. And that's the way I was with my mother. She knew wherever she go, I'm going. Go to the soup, I'm going to the soup market to play with her. She wanted to go downtown. She tell me, all right, get on that bus, bring your little sister. And you cross the at the corner. Don't cross the street. The light is not green. Don't cross in between. So I walk and she said, you stand there until the light turns and then you go in front of Woolworths and I'll be there. So I sit there waiting for her, knowing that we at Woolworths, we're getting ready to get a milkshake and cheese and burger. Yep. I can talk to her from now on because I took her everywhere. She rode in limos, she rode on my planes, first class. She stayed in my suite, because I always got two bedroom suites, so she had me on the other side. And I gave her minks and diamonds and pearls and everything she wanted. I was the only one to go buy her clothes. My sister took her shopping and she wouldn't take nothing. So she called me, Sister Laura called me and said, you need to come in and take your mother to the store. So I said, I'll be there. She said, when? It's 2 o'clock. I'll be there. I got there about 5 o'clock. She said, the store's closed early. And you're not going to get anything in 2 hours. And I said, yeah, watch me. I went to that store. Everything I brought my mama liked. I brought her blouses or skirts or pants. I even brought her underclothes and got a new pair of glasses, which we couldn't pick up for weeks from then. They had a lot of wigs, so I brought her all kinds of wigs. So my sister said, how in the world did you get her to take what you want? Well, I knew how to play a game with her. I just tell my mama she's my mama. Okay, mama. Oh, that looks so good. Oh, that looks good. Oh, dude, I love that woman. She knew I loved her too. She knew it. And I was speaking in Las Vegas. We just had a fight. No, I wasn't in Las Vegas. Yeah, I was in Reno. I was in Nevada. I was in Reno, Nevada. And we just had the Joe Frazier and Larry Holmes, and I was speaking well. And a young lady said to my mother, that man speaks like a doctor. And she said, oh, my son? That's your son? Yes. Oh, he's so intelligent. Yes, he used to bring me home all else. I said, Mama, you can't tell a stranger that. he brought home all else. Yeah, I defined my mama. But not that she knew it, she had to catch me. You catch me, I get a whoop. Any other time, don't tell. I don't bring no bad news. So you had to either tell on me. But the only one who used to protect me and my sister's honor, because we were like twins. Everywhere I went, she went. That was, she was a little tomboy. I pulled her out of a box. So when girls were going their hair and swinging their arms, my sister was throwing uppercuts and left hooks and right hands. And I never knew I was going to be in the boxing world. I just knew at the age of 7 or 8, I got to teach my sister. 12 years old, I got to teach her. And she learned well. We was very, very close. And the only time she got upset with me is when I left. Because I left my mother at 14. I told her the only way I can grow if I go and leave. And so my sister was more angry than she was because she said her best friend would leave her. Of course, I never came back. I wanted to evolve in the world. I figured that's enough. I want to thank you, Sal, for giving me this opportunity. I got another hour, but I don't need another hour. I'll be back. I shall return, and I shall return to be able to tell you more about my life history. Now, you'll find myself talking about the history, the present, and the future. I can do all three. So I may jump back sometimes, but when I begin to write what I'm preaching, then it will be put in proper perspective. And we got people that's able to do that. And inshallah, it can be one hell of a story, because my story is about what I have done. But I ain't tell you the story about the emphases of the great Muhammad Ali. Yes, he's going to be in my movie, but there's things that Ali has done that I observed that allow me to want to be just like him. Yes, and I found out there's good in so many people. You just take the good, leave the bad behind. That's what I suggest. So we're going to close. I got in pretty good. It's 5:13, so we went over an hour and 15 minutes. And maybe I will introduce to you how I brought the ratings of HBO and how I went and got Showtime and who was down at the totem pole and look at them today. How I was able to bring the ratings of ESPN, what I've done for USA, and how I brought the biggest ratings ever in the history of prime time for my boxing event. I have those records, and they're on the legal. And one thing about where they got them put out, you will find out those are some great fights on NBC. 49, brothers and sisters, 49, that's a lot of homes in prime time. You got to be good to do that. Well, I'm not going to take all the credit. I'll be remiss if I don't tell you that all I did was trust in Allah and don't think just for myself. And I went out there with God's name, and Allah gave it to me. It's one thing to do all of this, and everything looks prescribed. And you're sitting there and you wait for the bell, say, ding, that first bell. You say, whoa, now you can breathe. The show is on. But you don't really see the show until sometimes you sit in your den or your living room and you put the show on, and you say, wow. Did I do that? That's when you know it's Allah. Because there's no way you come out of the projects, Marad. There's no way that you grew up as a Lear. There's no way that you change your name and you don't use the Robert rules. You go against the grain. There's no way you'll be known in 200 foreign countries and 6 continents. There's no way. There's no way that all of the executives of those major companies, I can pick up the phone and we'll have a long conversation. Because why? I was an asset to them and not a burden. And yes, Oprah Winfrey did well with ABC. And yes, so did Bill Cosby do with NBC. But very rare, whether it's out there or it's not, that someone went out there and did wonders with ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox Network. You have to be insane to get past those executives. So with that said, I'm going to close out. And I thank Allah for guiding my tongue and allow me to reminisce. And hopefully we can continue to do this. If I can do this every week, I can cover a lot of ground. No one can give the story better than I, because I've learned things that if wasn't brought to my attention, you will forget. But I do have people that was there and can bear witness that the way this man performed, all the networks have great love for him, because I don't complain. If I go in there and leave $1 million behind because I didn't ask for it, I take it on the chin. I never come back and say, oh, by the way, I didn't ask you for enough. That was my fault. That's why they had a love for me, because Bob Iger said you can shake his hand and know his bond is his life. And that's what my whole reputation was. If I gave you my word, when my word failed, I would die. I don't let my word fail. So they all knew when I went in, and if I said I got Godzilla fighting Mighty Joe Young, they won't ask me, show it to me in writing. The Mirage said he has it. He has it. Now, that's amazing. You got to understand, I was working under two masters, Don King and Bob Arum. And they had so much money, it's unbelievable. Now, even Arum didn't have as much as Don. But I came with nothing. I came with God's name, with the understanding that I wanted to help men that cannot help themselves. I wanted to take them out of poverty. I wanted to make them independent financially. I wanted them to be able to give back to their community and to their wife and children. I advocated that. And it worked. So I found out when you just for yourself, and you just for yourself, brother and sister, Allah is not with you. Or he'll help you to take care of your immediate family, but in the final day of judgment, that don't get you into heaven. What gets you into heaven is you're doing good and you don't have to. That's me. I don't have to, but this is yours. Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah, Rabbi Adonai. Well, we're down to 5:20. 10 minutes will make it an hour and a half. And what will bring on the 10 minutes? I'm going to tell a story that I need to tell, and it came to me yesterday. Brother Abdullah Muhammad said, Rod, I never been out the country. You took me and my fighter out the country. I said, where did I take you? Venezuela. What fight was that? Pedroza. Oh, my God. My fighter's a Gerald Hayes. I said, from Newark. He said, yes. I said, I remember that distinctly, because we all flew into Vegas and I had the fight sold out at the Dooms Hotel that they tore down. And I had to get a call in the airport. It was 10 of us. And they said, phone call from Rod Muhammad now. Where do you answer a phone in the airport? And the gentleman said, go to the bar. I went to the bar, picked up the phone. Yes, can I help you? It's a rod. We're in trouble. That was Dr. Pacheco. I said, what's the problem? He said, Pedroza will not come out of Venezuela. I said, why not? He said, I don't know. The plane, the NBC plane sitting right there. He will not get on it. So I was watching TV while he was talking at the bar, and I saw Jesse Jackson. I said, Jesse Jackson is there. He said, I don't know who Jesse is, man. I said, listen to me. I said, Doc, I see Jesse in Venezuela. He said, Rod, what that got to do? I said, go find out his NBC cameras, because he's running for the president of the United States. So he come back to me and said, yes, the cameras are there. I said, tell him to get ready. We're going to Venezuela. I had to call the commissioner and cancel the fight, give all the money back. And that night, we was on the plane to Miami. We landed in Miami, went to sleep, woke up. And meanwhile, I'm talking to the promoters in Venezuela. They said, Marad, the fight is Sunday. You'll be here on Friday. There's no way we can sell tickets in that short period of time. I said, say Merry Christmas to everybody. Pad the house. I'm coming. When I got there, I went to Pedroza's home, and I said, what's wrong with you, champ? He looked his arm. He had a big boil. I said, oh, my God, that big boil. I said, you wouldn't pass in America. He said, I can pass here. I said, how are you going to pass? You're sick. He said, no, I'm 70% physically, but I'm 110 mentally. Fight is on. It was a great fight. Gerald was doing well. Into the 11th round, Pedroza knocked him out. Now, if that ain't a miracle, you tell me what is it. See, you can't tell me what I cannot do. God is great. I'm stopped in the airport. I'm not going to my fight that I've been booked for almost 90 days. And you're telling me I had to change my whole venue in another country. And Pedroza won't come out the country. So you know the old saying, if the mountain don't come to Muhammad, Muhammad goes to the mountain. I went to the mountain. I went to the mountain, put on that fight, and people said, whoa, look at that crowd. I ain't made one die. But I owed it to a third party called my fans. They were waiting for that fight that we were promoting for 90 days. And that's why they didn't care what venue it was at. They wanted to know if the fight on. The fight was on. Very successful. And NBC had a great love for the lot moment. And there's more like it. That's just one. That's just one. Lisa took up the time to say that I've been on the air for almost an hour and a half. I'm actually 4 minutes away from that half. So that's something that came to my mind. And I'm quite sure we'll put that writing in proper perspective. But I got an unbelievable, untouchable record of over 35 years of continuity. Never take no for an answer. Ever since I was a little boy. And I thank my mama. Why? Because my mama, when I said, I'll take care of her, she trusts me. She trusts that I would do just that. And brother, sister, I said 8. I could have been 7. Now, what mama will say, what are you going to do, boy? And that's why I loved her so much, because it's like she believed in me. She believed that I said, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do it. Now, I'm going to tell you how this all happened. Because I got 4 minutes. My father came to the home, and he showed them my sister was highly intelligent, went to art school, great model, went to all kinds of contests, beautiful young lady, Joan. And my sister Joan, being the oldest, had all A's. Then my brother, who I told you is a reader, Musa, had A's and B's. She skipped me and went to my sister, Law. She's an A student. And then he handed my report card. And he looked at it, it was all S. And he said, you see this one here, pointing to me. He said, this one will never make it. Now, you can't talk back to your dad. But thought traveling at 25,000 miles per second. And in my head, I said, you ain't God. I'm going to make it. And from that day, I never, ever accept what you can tell me I cannot do. And I want to do it because you say I cannot do it and you're not God. Thank you. I shall return the greatest Mahmood of all times. I shall return Murad Muhammad.